Blog Talk Radio.
If I knew then what I know now, no, I wouldn't change much of anything anyhow. It was 50-50, and I won the coin toss when you danced with me at the Huntington's Waltz. When you dance with me at the Huntington's Waltz. When you dance with me at the Huntington's Waltz.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to Help for HD Live. Help for HD Live is brought to you by Help for HD International and is made possible by our sponsors, Teva Pharmaceuticals and the Griffin Foundation. Today, we have Samuel Frank, MD, Associate Professor of Neurology at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center and Harvard Medical School. After completing his residency and fellowship at the University of Rochester, he joined the neurology faculty at Boston University from 2004 to 2015. Dr. Frank is an active member of the Huntington Study Group, having served as principal investigator and as a member of the HSG Executive Committee. He has also served as a member of the HDSA Board of Trustees and is the director of the HDSA Center of Excellence at Beth Israel Deaconess Trustee. Hopefully I'm saying that right. Is it Deaconess, Dr. Frank?
That's correct, yes.
Oh, yeah, Deaconess Medical Center. Dr. Frank is an inpatient neurologist consultant for the specialized Huntington's disease service at Tewksbury Hospital. Dr. Frank was the principal investigator of FIRST-HD, a phase 3 clinical investigating deuterated tetrabenazine as a possible treatment for chorea associated with HD. Last week, the FDA approved this new drug based on positive results from the FIRST-HD trial, which was led by the Huntington Study Group. On behalf of Teva Pharmaceuticals. So we are really excited, you guys. We have another FDA-approved drug. Yes, this is something to celebrate for so many reasons, and we are going to talk about those reasons today. So welcome to the show, Dr. Frank.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be talking about this.
Yes, definitely. Let's jump right in and talk about what is deuterated tetrabenazine and how is it related to tetrabenazine?
So deutetrabenazine goes by a few different names. Deuterated tetrabenazine is kind of the more expanded, but in development it was known as SD809, and now it's known by its brand name Austedo. And this was, as you said, recently approved by the FDA to treat chorea associated with Huntington's disease. And what deutetrabenazine is the molecule tetrabenazine, but altered, and it's built from the ground up. The company originally was Auspex that was purchased by Teva, have this technology of taking a deuterium atom and replacing it in place of some of the hydrogen atoms on particular molecules. The tetrabenazine molecule was particularly useful or designed to take this on. Now, getting back to high school chemistry, deuterium is just hydrogen that has an extra neutron. So it's not radioactive. It's actually 1-2% of the hydrogen atoms that are in us as we speak. But this is the first time that it's really been tested in a drug compound for safety and efficacy, which is another reason that it makes it fairly groundbreaking. So what it does is it changes the metabolism, but it doesn't change the action of the drug. And so what we did is in this double-blind placebo-controlled trial, we compared deutetrabenazine to placebo for chorea. We had some secondary outcomes looking at overall change based on the perception of the people participating as well as the clinicians and quality of life as well as a number of safety measures. And that was really the primary reason to look at this was the chorea. And we showed that it did reduce chorea in a statistically significant way, meaning that it wasn't just due to chance, and had some other benefits as well. We also looked at the side effect profile, and it was very well tolerated. Compared to placebo, there were really only two adverse events that we saw that popped out. One was somnolence, and this was about 11% versus almost 5% in the placebo group, and the other was GI side effects. Those that were on dutetrabenazine had a few, and it's still a small percentage, had some diarrhea. So its mechanism of action in the brain is very similar to tetrabenazine in that it's a class of medicines called the VMAT2 inhibitors, which is involving the dopamine aspect of the brain. So I think that's kind of an overview of the compound itself and what First HD found in terms of the trial.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that once this news came out, and even through the process of going through the trial of SD-809, I think a lot of the community were saying it's just tetrabenazine. That's what they kept saying, it's just tetrabenazine again. And I think it's really important for us to, and I know you, Dr. Frank, would be the best person to talk about this, is this just isn't xenazine again.
This is not just xenazine again. A few things related to this. One is that it is a novel molecule, and that's because of the deuterium that's on there, and that is new and interesting technology that can be applied to other drugs. So drugs that may be taken 5 or 6 times a day, for example, the deuterium technology can be applied to that and change the metabolism of those drugs. So I think for that aspect alone, it's novel and interesting and new. There is also a real difference in terms of the side effect profile. And I think that's an important aspect to pay attention to, because there may be some people that can get better control of their chorea but can't necessarily tolerate higher doses of tetrabenazine. And so I think that's an important distinction between those two. The other aspect is that when there's a drug that is in your system for more prolonged periods of time rather than kind of ups and downs, those fluctuations can cause issues by themselves versus just having a more steady dose of drug in your system. So yes, it does also address chorea, but there were two things that we saw in this trial that we did not see in the past with tetrabenazine. For example, we saw that dystonia also improved. Now, this was not the primary reason to look at dutetrabenazine, sure, but that is a really important aspect of Huntington's disease, particularly as people advance. Mm-hmm. The other thing is that we saw a significant improvement in weight. Now, I am at Tewksbury Hospital now, and I can tell you that we struggle with every patient who's here who has more advanced Huntington's disease to keep their weight up. So I think that's a really important difference between the two. So yes, they both are approved for chorea, but I think that there are some substantial differences that make them different molecules and difference in terms of their clinical use.
Yeah, absolutely. And, it's so funny. We always talk about what doesn't work more than we do, so what works. So when I was traveling and I traveled all over the United States and talked in support groups and settings about a lot of different subjects, but a lot of the time tetrabenazine came up because that was the only drug we had at the time. And so, people always talked about the adverse effects. It was always, my husband was so fatigued. It worked. The chorea was, it brought down his chorea, but he was so tired he wouldn't be able, he couldn't get off the couch. I always heard about these horrible adverse effects. And so this doesn't mean that, Austedo is not going to have these adverse effects. But the one thing when the trial was over and I was looking at all the readouts and stuff, and I'm not a scientist, but one thing that did show me when I was looking at these was that these percentages definitely went, and these are huge things that impact our lives, not only the person living with HD and the caregiver, but the families, is, severe fatigue and, these different things that were happening, severe depression. Obviously, there's so many lists of different adverse effects for different drugs. But if we can reduce some of those, that's exciting, because these effects do impact our life.
They do, and I think depression is one of the biggest ones. So about 20% of people develop depression in the same time exposure on tetrabenazine, and we actually had more depression in the placebo group than we did in the deutetrabenazine group in the first HD trial. So it does happen. It's in 50% of people with Huntington's disease. So it's not that we didn't see any depression, but we saw more in placebo versus deutetrabenazine. So it's very true. And I think that the analogy that I use is that aspirin's been around forever. It works, right? So it'll take care of your headache or joint pains. But if you take too much for too long, there can be other side effects. It can cause ringing in the ears or stomach problems. So there are other anti-inflammatories that we've developed that are easier on the stomach, easier on the kidney. So to say it's just tetrabenazine, it's like saying we have aspirin. Why bother with ibuprofen and naproxen? Just take those off the market. And so I think it is moving forward in the field in terms of symptomatic therapy. And it's important to do that. Until we have a cure, we really do need to address the symptoms that people are having today and do that with the least amount of side effects possible. And I think that's the step that deutetrabenazine takes us in.
Definitely. Okay, so let's talk about who is a good candidate for Austedo.
Right. Well, I mean, it's pretty broad. Huntington's disease is different for every person, of course, and so each patient that's out there needs to discuss whether they're a candidate for this drug. So this works on the motor side of Huntington's disease. And so I think that in general, this is not going to be for people that have purely behavioral and cognitive aspects in terms of the disease. So obviously there has to be some motor onset. And so there also has to be some bothersome aspects to the chorea. Many people with Huntington's disease and chorea often don't recognize the severity of their chorea or the extent that it's really interfering. And so one technique is to focus not on the chorea itself, but the consequences of the chorea. Are people knocking things off of shelves or off of coffee tables or pictures off the wall? If you talk to the caregivers, have they already cleared out everything in the house from shoulder level down so that the person with chorea isn't injuring themselves and they're not knocking things off the walls or off of tables?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think consequences of chorea are important to assess whether it's bothersome or not. And if they haven't tried anything or they haven't had success with other medications that are used for chorea, to suppress chorea, or they have side effects, then I think that it may be worth considering using Austedo. So those are kind of the circumstances that I might think about using it.
Absolutely. And it's so funny you say that. I mean, talking to the caregivers, my husband has severe chorea, always has. And, you know, he would talk to people and all the time, does that bother you? It absolutely doesn't bother him. He has a total lack of awareness about it. He thinks it's mild. And he's just, you know, happy as can be. Does this affect your life? No. And then look at me and ask me how it affects my life, right? And my children's life. So I think it is so important for doctors. I know obviously these amazing HD experts like Dr. Frank, and we're very blessed to see Dr. Wheelock at UC Davis, that actually look at the caregivers and say, so how is chorea impacting your life? But I think so many doctors don't. So I think that's a whole nother area to have to tackle, right? But I think it is important to listen to the caregivers on how chorea impacts their life.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So how, this is probably a really hard question, but how soon can someone get this new drug?
Well, I mean, I think that's obviously a question for Teva, but being close to the development process, I can take a stab at this. Teva was, I think, hoping to have this up and running before the FDA said, we need to check our boxes and go back and check those for us, even though they didn't need any more studies. There were a few other things that needed to get done before the approval. And so now that it's approved, I think that there were no concerns in terms of safety or efficacy. And so I think the company was getting geared up to have this ready to go. So they've said that really in the next week or so, it should be available, which is extraordinarily rapid in terms of a new drug on the market. because sometimes it can take a few months for the drug production to get up and running and all the pieces in place. But I think Teva is really prepared to get this out into the community quite quickly. So it should be available in the next week or two.
Yeah, and I remember when Xenazine came to market, my husband was one of the first patients on there from the clinic that we went to, and it took a while to get it all figured out on how it was going to get shipped and how the insurances were going to pay for it. So I think we have to remember, as a community, we're not used to getting new treatments or therapies. We just aren't. We unfortunately, don't get that. So we don't aren't aware of what that means to have a new treatment available to us. And I think what I learned back years ago when Xenazine came to market is it does take time. And for them to have it ready to go in a week is amazing. And bravo for Teva to be ready to know that this is going to be a drug that we need as a community and getting it ready for us. But I think we have to also remember that it takes a while to – I've heard people ask me, well, is there going to be payment assistance? Is there going to be copay assistance? What about our insurance? I think these are definitely things that need to be ironed out, and it's going to take a little time to get those ironed out. But Teva, I think, has done an amazing job starting the process and all of these different things that are going to happen with bringing a new drug to a community. So I think maybe – definitely, as Teva develops these new assistant programs, co-payment assistant programs, or something, we definitely will bring people on the show to let us know what's going on with that, so we know about all the resources available to us. I think Teva is an amazing company.
They are an amazing company, and I think that they get the picture in terms of Huntington's disease in general. If you look at their other development programs, they're not just focused on chorea and pure motor symptomatic therapy. They have other interests as well, in both in terms of their clinical trial program and other assessments that they're partnering with other companies to move forward with understanding Huntington's disease and helping out the whole community. So I agree, they're a pretty amazing company to work with. And it's true that even though the drug is going to be available, I'm sure the treatment forms are going to be up and running in the next week or two, but we're going to have to see what happens. But I'd be shocked if Teva was the type of company that's going to leave insurance companies and patients and families with large bills. I just really mm-hmm. doubt that's going to happen. And so there's going to be some program in place to minimize the burden on Huntington's disease patients and families.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll definitely keep all of our listeners updated as we learn more about those programs. So for families who aren't impacted by chorea and won't need this drug, what is important about this news?
Well, I mean, I think it doesn't really to me, it's really important that having a successful trial in a rare disease that started off with an idea and leading up to drug approval should provide hope for the community that not only are there other companies that might look at this and say, hey, there's this community that's really interested and invested and will help us out in terms of the development process and volunteering for studies. But I also hope that it will show researchers that they can explore other options and that pharmaceutical companies can see that this is a financially feasible model. The pharmaceutical companies need to recoup their costs. They are businesses, and in many cases, they're public companies that need to answer to their shareholders and investors. And so they need to make some money back. And if they can do that with a rare disease, even better. I think that having a drug approved, even though it may not be for you or for the use, I think should show some hope and promise for the community. And I mean that both from a patient perspective and also the pharmaceutical company perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. And something I kind of was thinking about is when we lately the FDA, we all went on the 2015 and spoke in front of the FDA, and then we noticed that a lot of things were happening, like IONIS going to another country, not having a trial in the U.S. And we know we have these kind of really exciting things on the horizon, like gene therapy, stem cell, Wave is so great what they're doing. And I think it was scary for us as a community to see that we saw the delays by the FDA, and we saw these things. Is are people going to continue to invest in Huntington's research if the FDA will not let things go through for and will, you know, are putting roadblocks? So, you know, Help for HD, we started this big FDA campaign, and we wrote, and the FDA received hundreds of letters. And the really cool thing is the FDA responded and sent us letters back, which is really, really cool for them to show us that they received our letters and they were reading them. But so I think this is something, whenever we get something like a drug approval, this is something to celebrate, because we're opening the gates for the future. And also helping the FDA understand Huntington's a little bit better as well, because each time they get, they have to go through this process, I think they're probably learning a little bit more about Huntington's disease. I don't know that, but that would be my guess. So I think that even if you don't have chorea, this is a huge success for, I mean, this is something we need to celebrate as a community, that we have approval. We got approval by the FDA, and we have a company that is supporting HD, and it's so cool all that they're doing. So I think we all should definitely be celebrating this.
Yeah, and let me just put in a plug too, because although the FDA has the final word on this, the number one reason for delay in getting a drug to market is actually not the FDA. It's actually lack of participation, and 80% of clinical trials fail to recruit on time. And so that's something that we as a community can help out with in terms of volunteering for studies that are going on. And that's really the bottleneck is finishing up recruitment and getting people into studies. I mean, a lot of the design of clinical trials has to do with the FDA and input, but the ultimate kind of once the trials are done to the approval by the FDA is actually a pretty rapid process, especially compared to 10 or 20 years ago.
Absolutely, and I 100% agree with that. We have to participate in clinical research. And I think it's my husband and I and my children, we've participated as a family in 6 clinical trials and studies, and I think for us it has been a really great experience to participate in clinical studies. So I agree that was a good, absolutely. So I think we've talked about costs, we've talked about side effects, maybe interactions. You know, is there anything we could talk about interactions?
There's not much to talk about. There are some drugs that change the kind of metabolism aspect, you know, through the liver, that you just need to be careful about the maximum dose that you're on. And so these are medications, some of them are like Paxil, for example, that may act in the body in a similar way as the deuterium atoms do. And so those are not necessarily safety interactions, but it may limit the dose that you need to treat chorea. And there are many medications that interact with the dopamine system that can change the electrical system in the heart, and there have been fairly extensive studies with deutetrabenazine that it does not do that. So that's good news. And there are some medications that can interact in that way, but you don't have to worry about that with deutetrabenazine. So it's a pretty clean drug in that way, that there are a few exceptions that are in the label and that we were aware of when we were running First HD, but in general, it does not interact with a lot of medications.
That's fantastic. And I know a lot of our listeners on this show are international listeners. So what about availability outside of the U.S.?
Yeah, I mean, I obviously Huntington Study Group is an international organization, and we, as part of the clinical trials, we had sites in Canada and Australia as well. And so we do have some clinical trial participants that are outside the U.S. Teva is an international company, and I don't know what their plans are outside the U.S. in terms of developing this drug, but I know that they are pursuing continuing access for people that participated in the trials in Canada and Australia. But as far as development programs working with Health Canada, for example, I'm not quite sure what the plan is from Teva. That's really more of the business development decision that I think we're waiting to hear what their plans are outside the U.S. right now.
Okay. All right. That's great. Okay. So what... I know your involvement in HSG is so huge, and you're always doing clinical trials. We love that. But let's talk about some, like, what's next with HD research. What are you seeing, Dr. Frank, coming down the pipelines?
Yeah, I mean, this is an exciting week because of Austedo getting approved and helping out with the symptomatic therapies. And I think that there are more drugs in the pipeline to help out with symptomatic therapies. And until we get a cure for Huntington's disease, we're going to continue that. And so I think that what we have in terms of other clinical trials are more disease modifying and some going after the non-motor aspects of the disease. So for example, there's an Azavan compound that's in development for irritability in Huntington's disease, and that trial is just getting started. And looking at the disease itself, can we go after the protein with something like an infusion? Can we go after RNA that helps to build the protein? And there are different approaches that, say, Wave Life Sciences or the Ionis compound is really going after. Or ultimately, in the future, can we go in and change DNA? Are there DNA-modifying therapies, like with CRISPR-Cas9 technology, that we can ultimately get in there? And that's not ready for prime time or human studies at all, but I think that technology is becoming more widely used in the lab and has more promise down the road. And so I think that there are many different approaches that are in development beyond symptomatic therapies, but getting at the underlying disease process as well. So there's so much that's happening, and people can find out about this. I think that the a couple of good ways. One is to go to the Huntington Study Group website. That's huntingtonstudygroup.org. It's pretty easy to find out what's happening in terms of clinical trials, and that's what HSG is about. You can also, through HDSA's website, the Huntington's Disease Society of America, go to hdtrialfinder.org, and all you need is an email and a zip code, and you can find out what's near you. You can also try drinking from the fire hose, so to speak, and going to clinicaltrials.gov and put in Huntington's, and you can see what pops up. But it's really often an overwhelming amount of information. But I would also encourage patients and families to look at the sponsors in different organizations, because there are some companies that may have something in development related to Huntington's disease that may not be on either any of those websites, and they might have an interesting or different approach to Huntington's disease. So I think in some there's a lot that's close to at least interactions with the FDA or making HD, as Ray Dorsey from HSG says, an increasingly treatable disease in terms of its symptoms. But I also think that there's a lot of excitement in development in both early human trials and in the lab for the future.
Yeah, absolutely. I think this is exciting times. I think I was just reading something on CRISPR-Cas9, and I was so excited to hear. Every time I listen to a webinar about it or read about it, and I know this is definitely in the future, but I see Huntington's disease brought up a lot as far as what they're talking about looking at. I think it's interesting, and I think it's exciting what the future is going to hold for this brilliant research that's coming down the way. So we just have to keep the hope and hold on tight. And see where this new kind of research and development goes. Any final thoughts, Dr. Frank, about this and about Austedo?
No, I mean, I think it's just exciting for the whole entire HD community to have a drug FDA approved. I think it's moving the field forward in terms of better symptomatic therapies and having more FDA approved therapies. And having more companies involved in treatments for Huntington's disease. And I think that It's an exciting week, but I think it also shows a lot of promise for the future. And I think it's a very hopeful time in the Huntington's disease community.
Yes, absolutely. Well, thank you so much for coming on today and talking with us. And if anyone has any questions, you guys can always reach out to the Huntington Study Group. They are a great resource for us. And also, as more resources come down with Keva, with, you know, if we find out about copay assistance or any type of ways for you guys to find out information through Keva, we will get that out to you as soon as possible through the social media platforms, and we'll have radio shows on it and everything to make sure you guys are well aware of everything going on. So just a couple updates, and then we will wrap up the show. I would like to for huge thanks to Teva Pharmaceuticals for an education grant. Help for H International is able to do 5 HYPE education days this year. That's highly interactive participant education. We started our first one in Sacramento a couple weeks ago. It was a great success. Everyone was really involved. And we go to Washington next week, and then we will be in Atlanta, Houston, and Iowa. HYPE is really great. It's a panel of experts and the community all working together to problem solve different like fictitious scenarios. It's been really fun, and it's amazing what the community has asked the professionals and how the professionals have helped us problem solve. We even had someone ask, you know, how to get their loved one out of a fire if they have a child with GHD and a husband with HD. So it's been really, really cool to watch us all problem solve together and figure out these scenarios. So we are excited to take that on the road. We will be holding our symposium in Tampa, Florida on October 21st. I know that's towards the end of the year, but mark your calendars. It's going to be a lot of fun. It'll be a great event. We also have Casino Night Out on April 22nd, and that's in New Berlin, Wisconsin. You can always go to our website to find out about all these different events coming up. We also just signed up to exhibit at the Chief of Police meeting in Alabama. As our listeners know, we have gone up and down California as well as Florida educating law enforcement about Huntington's disease, and now we are hitting Alabama, so we're really excited. We are going to launch going to that state with that huge meeting where all the police chiefs will be there, and we will give them information to go back and give to each of their departments about Huntington's disease. As always, you can go to our website and go to resources and go to LEAP, L-E-E-P, that's Law Enforcement Education Program. There is a place you can download all the videos about Huntington's disease and publications you could bring to your local law enforcement agency, and then there is also a link for you to go in and put your address and your department, and we, Help for HD, will contact that department, send them information, and see if they need anything else from us. And we also will let them know that there is a family or multiple families living in their area with Huntington's disease, so they are aware and they can help out your families if you need them. The FDA campaign is still going on. It's been a huge success. You can go to the website on the front page, click Get Involved, and you can there's templates there to send the FDA, and there's addresses and everything if you want to write the FDA and help them learn a little bit more about Huntington's disease and your story. And always, Family Relief Fund is open. If you need any relief, please go to that link and fill out, and Help for HD will review that. So I think that is it for today. Next month is an exciting month, HD Awareness Month, and so we will be releasing next week all that Help for HD International will be doing in the month of May for our community. I think that will do it. Everyone have a safe night, and tune in next week.